I am the architect. I created the Matrix.
Shall we play a game?
Let's get right to it before you listen to the TV today and get seduced with all the things they're going to say. So congratulations, by the way, to the Air Force, because they stepped forward and admitted what I've suggested for the last year and on several podcasts, and that is that all the enforcement and gun laws in the world simply do not work if we do not have a database that is current and kept up to date, so that people, when they go buy guns, if they're a felon in another state, can't buy them in the other state. In other words, if they're a felon in Florida, they try to buy guns in Kansas, they can't buy them. But if the database isn't up to date, then the person who's selling them the guns doesn't know the person is a felon, maybe even a convicted murderer in Florida. And what did the Air Force do? They admitted that had they updated the federal database with the information on Kelly, Devin Patrick Kelly, the person that killed those people in that church, if the Air Force had updated their database, then Kelly would not have been able to buy the guns that he legally purchased. Do you understand? It's exactly what I've been saying. I gave the analogy of the DMV, where it used to be, if you got a ticket in Kansas and you went over and got a ticket in Colorado, the people in Colorado didn't know that you're already on the hook for a ticket in Kansas. I believe now the DMV has national databases that prevent that from happening that are accessible by any police officer who's giving you a ticket. But how do we do the same thing in a national database on felons and assaults? We have that database, by the way. But if people like the Air Force don't enter the data, then it doesn't work. Now, I admire the Air Force. They stepped forward and admitted their mistake. Now, they're going to get criticized heavily for this. They'll be accused of complicity in any number of things. But I've mentioned this before in other situations where the FBI was investigating. No one stepped forward and even talked about the fact that the database wasn't current. Usually these people, and I say this without having a lot of evidence in front of me, have been on somebody's radar before. Kelly had been accused, he'd been convicted of assault, he'd been any number of medical issues, he'd been in, let me see if I can find out what he was. I think he was in some sort of an asylum for the mentally ill and escaped. And I'm not sure about how that worked, but the point is that this person was on people's radar, people being the FBI, but the database wasn't current. Therefore, when he went to buy guns, that is when Kelly went to buy guns, the gun supplier, when searching the database for information about Kelly, in other words, when the gun supplier is searching information to determine can he legally sell guns to Kelly, he didn't see that he was a mental patient, that he was a convicted felon, that he had been, convicted or accused of assault and abuse by the Air Force. And I may have the actual characterizations of his criminal record incorrect, but the point is still the same, and the Air Force admitted it, and my congratulations to them for doing it. Because I think if we were to get down into the weeds where some of these problems can be resolved, it's not about more laws. It's to a degree about enforcement, but to a major degree, it's about putting the information in the hands of people that can implement the laws we have. What does that mean? It means to me that if I run a gun shop and somebody comes in named Kelly, Devin Patrick Kelly, I ask him for his identification. He gives it to me. I search it in the database. I find he's a convicted felon, a mental patient, or was, and therefore I cannot sell him guns. Now, yes, I know we can't prevent the dishonest person from selling guns. That's not the problem, because we hear it more and more. These people buy guns legally, but the fact that they are felons or have criminal records, which would prevent them from buying guns legally, that information is not available to the seller of the guns. So, for me, it's give some conversation to these databases. I think it's too technical for most people. They don't understand it. Certainly, the people on TV don't understand it. They don't even know what a database is, more than likely, or the fact that it's current, or the fact that it should be searchable across state lines, searchable in real time. Somebody knows the answer, but when we look at it atmospherically, we say, oh gosh, it's a gun problem. When we look at it in detail, we say, oh gosh, it's not a gun problem. It's not a law problem. It's a database problem. And of course, that's not very exciting for TV talk shows. Okay, I've been asked again and again to defend Trump's intelligence. I'm not even sure where to begin. Is he intelligent? I think he went to Wharton Finance School. He had to be pretty smart to get through there. He didn't have to be smart to get in. I buy that. A lot of times people can get into schools and they're not that smart, but you got to pass the courses. Got to be reasonably smart. For me, I think the fact that he built all of these buildings in difficult cities like New York City is a credit to his intelligence. I mean, just try to go lease an apartment in New York City. That's difficult. Go try to get some land and build a house in New York City. That's probably impossible. But he's building 80-story office buildings. And he's done it in other big cities. You cannot be stupid and do that. You have to be tenacious, but you have to be smart, because there's agreements involved, there's negotiations with unions, there's borrowing money, there's paying the money back. The list of obstacles that you have to uncover to get a building constructed in a large city has to be proof of his intelligence. Now, intelligent people do stupid things. They do. So if you look at some stupid things that he does or super stupid things that he tweets, you'd say he's not intelligent. No, I think he is intelligent, and I think the proof is exactly what I just said. Is there other proof? I don't think you need much more than that. Get on a plane, fly to New York City, and say, hey, I want to build a building on some main street. Where do you even start? No, he's intelligent. You have to think through extremely difficult things to get that done. Or build a golf course. My gosh, that's not easy. Land, environmental restrictions, environmental regulations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. No, he's intelligent. He's not intelligent in what I call a book sense. I always thought Obama was intelligent in a book sense. He understood how to say things with an admirable vocabulary. Trump doesn't have that. He doesn't have an admirable vocabulary. He says things right off the top of his head, and sometimes they come out wrong and they come out stupid. But that doesn't mean he's not intelligent. I've known some smart people in my life. And by that I mean people that did very well on their SAT scores, made great grades in college, and they still did stupid things. They made bad choices. I don't think all the intelligence in the world, by the way, equips you or anybody to be president. I think running for president takes tenacity and intelligence, but I think it's another level of knowledge, understanding, and perhaps many other emotionally related parameters required to be president. And if you look at all our presidents, they've all been different in one way or the other. Now, I understand Jimmy Carter, who was a physics major, was thought to be one of the most intelligent. But he was a peanut farmer, and I can't think anything that Jimmy Carter did that was smart. He left a lot of people in Iran until Reagan came along and had them released. Kennedy was just a good-looking guy who understood TV. Ford, people laughed at his intelligence. I don't know if he was intelligent or not, but he certainly didn't act like it. And he was criticized heavily and mocked by the comedians for his clumsiness and dumbliness, if you will. And Nixon, was he smart? Not very. But see, we differentiate between intelligence and smartness and cleverness and those kinds of things. So what do I conclude? What am I defending? I'm not defending Trump's intelligence. I'm just saying all the evidence point to the fact that he's intelligent. What does that mean to me? I mean, an SAT score probably means he scored 130 or 140. Is he a genius level like Jimmy Carter? I don't think so. But I don't know for sure that he was a genius. But 130, 140, that's a pretty intelligent person. That plus tenacity gets you the ability to build buildings in New York City. So we have the Virginia elections. And the Democrats will never stop talking about it for the next 4 or 5 months. They beat Trump in Virginia. They defeated Trumpism. A Democrat was elected. Now we have the beginning of the new Democratic empire. Does anybody believe that? I certainly don't believe that. But you're going to hear all the headlines. Virginia and other states reject Trumpism. Whatever Trumpism is, I don't know. Democrat Ralph Northern beats back a charge from Republican Ed Gillespie in the race for Virginia governor. One of several conflicts across America where the Trump resistance won. In other words, somehow a vote for Ed Gillespie, a vote for Ralph Northern was a vote against Trump. Or at least that's how it's going to be characterized by the Democrats. I just say big deal. So they get one governor, they get some other places. What difference does it make? So I'm going to come back to some other things later on today. I want to make some comments about Trump's tax policy. I'll go ahead and make them now. He wants to lower taxes. And everybody says, well, he's lowering them on the rich, or he's lowering them on the middle class, or he's lowering them on the poverty class. Well, first place, half of America doesn't pay taxes. That's the numbers I always hear. So whether it's 30%, 40%, or 50%, the bottom people in the economic scale don't pay any taxes, or what we'll call income taxes anyway. Now, the principle for me in lowering taxes is much simpler than most people think about it. I look at it this way. If I have a dollar and I give it to the government to spend, will they do a better job of spending it than I would? I think the answer is simple. I'd rather spend my dollar myself and let the way I spend my dollar, in other words, the goods and services that I buy, direct the market. If I spend my dollar buying more cars, then the car companies will make more cars. If I spend my dollar buying more ping pong tables, then the ping pong table manufacturers will make more ping pong tables. If I spend my dollar buying caviar, then the caviar people will sell more caviar. Now, I give my dollar to the government. What do they do with it? I don't have a clue. But can they spend it better than I can? Can the government make the market decision that I would make? What if the government spends it on the military? And I don't agree with that. I can't control that. Oh, yes, I can vote, but if they want to spend it on the military, they'll go ahead and do it. Because they don't ask me, literally, how to spend that dollar. Don't come back to me and tell me it's done by voting. I'm just saying that if I spend my dollar on ping pong tables, I know where it's going, and I know what part of the market it's influencing. And if I decide not to buy Chinese goods with my dollar, then I know that I'm influencing the economics of America. But if the government gets my dollar, what do they do with it? Give it to entitlement programs, pay the post office people more. I'm not saying I'm against that, but I'm just saying they're making market decisions by the way they, the government, spends their dollar. I disagree. I think the people should make the market decisions. Let the market then dictate what goods and services are made and sold. So in principle, I'm always in favor of lowering taxes. The whole idea that if you lower taxes, you increase the national debt, just doesn't make any sense. Doesn't work. Oh yes, I understand. If you were to plot the government's expenditures for the next few years, or planned expenditures, or forecast expenditures, and you don't have any more money coming into the government, then it looks like, oh my gosh, if we lower taxes, we have more debt. And of course, the magnificent assumption, the magnificent obsession the economists have in that econometric model is, what do they use for GNP growth? If you use 4% GNP growth, you can lower taxes all day long and reduce the debt. If you use 2% GNP growth, you can increase taxes all day long. You probably don't decrease the debt at all, because the GNP growth isn't there. The key to these econometric models, the parameter that has the most impact on the conclusion, is the GNP rate of growth. We've already seen some of that, where if we get over 3%, all of a sudden we start having a surplus. So the 2 points for me on that taxes are quite simple. First, yes, always lower taxes. I don't care if you lower it only for the rich, because they have to spend their money too. And when they spend their money, they make decisions that are market-based, not government-based. Sure, I'd like to have a lower taxes. I'd like to have a situation where if you're over 70, you can make all the money you want, don't pay taxes on any of it, encouraging people to go back to work part-time. And in a full employment economy, why not have people go back to work? The days when we required people to retire at 65, those are over. People are living to their 90s now. They're going to need to work more, even if it's just part-time. Let the elderly, let the seniors work more, work part-time, and eliminate taxes for seniors. So, main principle, lower taxes, because I believe individuals, consumers, can determine how they want the market to grow by the way they spend their dollar better than the government can make that decision. I don't imagine anybody should disagree with that, because I don't know anyone that believes the government spends their money properly. Everybody that I know, whether they're a Democrat or Republican, criticize the government. They don't spend enough on education. They don't spend enough on health care. They don't spend enough on roadways. They don't spend enough on bridges. And oh, by the way, let's just give them some more money so they can continue to not doing those things. On the other hand, let's lower taxes and let's let you and I make the decision for the marketplace. So that's my issues on the church shooting on the database. That's my issues on Trump's intelligence and on the tax policies and on Virginia. But my hat's off to the Air Force for stepping forward and admitting the error and not saying it was just a massive gun problem. It wasn't. It was a database problem. My heart goes out to all those people that were killed and injured. And I'm sure it took a lot for the Air Force to step up and admit what they had admitted. And I congratulate them for admitting the mistake. So that the people who like to prevent these things in the future can focus on the right ways to fix it. And that's all for today. Bob Sherwood, November the 8th, 2017, coming to you from the heartland of America. Yes, I'm conservative, but more and more I think I have a little left-leaning beliefs. And by the way, yes, I've been criticized heavily for recommending to people watch Oliver Stone. I understand his opinions sometimes are absolutely as far left as you can get. But I think we're smart enough to look at the facts. In his 11-part series on the untold history of the United States, is factual. I mean, he shows the facts. The documents that he's showing are factual. His textual explanations might be opinion-oriented, but I think we can separate the difference there. Is America all bad? Is that what Oliver Stone says? No. Do we have some level of moral superiority? No. But I do believe that if we don't really understand history, don't understand how we got here to this point, that we run the risk that we simply repeat history again and again until maybe some generation studies history and prevents the repetition of the same mistakes. No one wants another Korea. No one wants another Vietnam. And in my opinion, no one really wants our government to step into sovereign countries and overthrow the dictators or people who run those countries. At least I don't. Maybe that's naive, but that's what I think. I think there is a level of sovereignty that we should respect, even if we don't respect how they do it. There's soccer moms in every country. That's all for today on Tuesday. We have a lot of meetings today, so have a great day. Listen again tomorrow and pass these podcasts along, because we may get some converts, or maybe even I might influence someone who listens to these podcasts today who will be president in 30 years. And they will have been motivated to do something, to make some changes, of the kind I espouse on this conservative network, coming to you from the heartland of America. Signing off, this is Bob Sherwood with webtalkwithbob@gmail.com. Have a great day. Bob brought to you courtesy of